in Community Talks, we are going to start with a fandom feeling that we got sent after our last episode, which was our holiday episode. So fandom feelings, just to remind anyone who doesn't know, is our little anonymous drop box. You can go on our website and send us a message that way. This person said, "The holiday episode is officially my favorite due to the mention of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is totally a Christmas movie." I feel like, Flame, you were torn on whether it was a Christmas movie or not. It was an honorable mention.
It got an honorable mention. And this is a personal decision. I don't count Christmas movies if they just contain the holiday of Christmas.
Right. I got that impression.
Yeah. And so, but I am very picky about this. At least four people broke up with me over the last 2 weeks because I don't count Die Hard.
Yeah.
I understand this. Everyone is entitled to their own incorrect opinion. It's how it works. I have to be gracious about this. But I do love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and I don't quite understand why it's not, especially for those of us who are RDJ stans, like why it's not one of the ones people talk about more, because it is the most peak his energy of like any movie I've seen, even most of the Iron Man ones.
I'll be honest, I didn't remember that it, like I saw it within the last year, I think, and I didn't remember that it happened at Christmas.
That's fair. I don't think it's a major plot point. Like, it's not the major thing that I remember, but what I remember the most is just his chemistry with Val Kilmer.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
it's pretty great chemistry.
Plus, it gives us a gif of RDJ kissing a tall blonde man. So, you know, for the Steve Tonys in the fandom, it's a boon all on its own.
It's helpful. And then those people who really like to see him a little bit beat up, so many screenshots.
Yes.
For that one, and also looking confused because his character spends most of that movie confused.
He does. And it's funny and it's fun. Yeah, I'd recommend that movie too.
Yeah, highly. So, no, I'm glad to, all kidding aside, legitimately, whatever movie means Christmas for you is what movie means Christmas or Hanukkah or winter for you is completely valid. And I'm just being silly and ridiculous. There were people that got really annoyed that I didn't talk more about Home Alone or A Christmas Story. If those are your movies and those are your movies, that's amazing. It's just that these were my standards. And I will say that since I last talked, I watched two more TV holiday movies that I truly, truly loved and didn't get a chance to talk on the pod. So the more we create fun, festive movies that give me warm, like hygge holiday feels, then I'll talk about them. And my rankings may change. I don't think anything will truly ever unseat Muppet's Christmas Carol as my truest love, but who knows? The world is wide.
We'll have to check in again next year.
Yeah, I will keep you all posted.
I know for some people that their Christmas movie is the entire Lord of the Rings thing because the holidays is the only time they have time to watch the whole thing.
Oh, so for sure. I know people feel that way about Harry Potter because in America, one of the TV channels that it's used to be called ABC Family, now it's called Freeform, shows the entire canon every Christmas and massive marathons. And so people always think about Harry Potter as Christmas movies. That's amazing. It's as much about traditions as anything else.
But today we're talking about goals and planning. So we hit up our Twitter and we asked you guys about what sorts of things you track, and y'all had some opinions.
So we asked, the phrasing of the question was, do you keep track of words that you write/read for goal setting or other purposes? Vote below and then tell us why, if you please. So the options were yes, both, no, both, yes, writing, and yes, reading.
The breakout winner was yes, writing, which implies that those people only track writing but not reading. And that was 41%. So pushing close to half of people track their
reading. But then not super far behind at 31% was that they don't track anything.
Yeah. If we combine yes, both, and yes, writing. So these, in fact, if we combine everybody who tracks something, that's a vast majority.
Yeah.
It's almost 70%, a little over 70%. Sorry, a little under 70%. So most people track something. Of the people who track, most people track writing. Next up were people who tracked both. And then lastly, we only had 8% that said they tracked reading, but not writing.
Which was what I would have voted before I got back into fandom. So I get that completely. What I found really interesting too, is we had a couple responses, people who typed out their explanations, and most of those were people who track things. We did have one person, our fellow MTH mod nostalgic at sea, who said she tracks nothing because writing is already hard enough for her and she doesn't want it to feel more like homework, which I completely get.
Totally fair.
And then other people, some fandom friends, some future guests of the show, some cover artists that we've had in the past all responded. And one of my favorites was from Andy Sheik, who wrote our first plug fic back in episode one, and for whom her willingness to let us do that with this random new podcast. She says, writing goals really help keep me on track. If I didn't set daily, weekly, monthly word goals or deadlines, I wouldn't be able to write consistently. The sprinting bots on Discord help immensely with that, which again, we talked about in our strategy conversation about the importance of 20 minutes, and a lot of sprints are 15 or 20 and those kind of work well.
It was interesting that several people said that they keep track in the sense of they keep track within a particular fic, like they want to keep chapters to a certain length, or they want to keep the fic to a certain length, or they just want to know how the fic is going and at what rate kind of, but only for that fic, and they don't keep track of like their weekly total across fics or their annual total across fics. And that seemed like a fairly common approach. I also really liked, I liked the response from Danny, who said, I mostly keep track because I get curious after I hit a bit of inspiration and want to know what I was able to accomplish. And I like the relationship of tracking with accomplishment, because I feel like, because this is fun and we are doing this for fun, that the result of tracking should be a sense of accomplishment.
For sure. And a couple of people as well, which I found interesting, Jay and then Jer and Marvel Wizard Mom. Jer and Wizard Mom, I know, are both in Iron Strange fandom. They implied heavily that the tracking of writing was also part of their relationship to their readers. Like, I want a chapter length to go outside of these boundaries. That kind of stuff. And to me, that is a communication of, I want to be careful that I'm not giving people too much to chew on, or I want to make this commitment that when somebody sees a new chapter from me, this is the word count they can expect. And maybe I'm completely getting into that, but that's what it communicated to me. And I find that fascinating as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. I will say that it's, there's a suite of very common, we could say frequently asked questions that people who are new to fandom or new to Discord or maybe new to creating for fandom tend to ask when they join the Discord server and suddenly have access to hundreds or even thousands of people who they can get instant opinions from. And I could list them all out, maybe someday I will, but one of them is definitely, how long should a chapter be? And yes. This question gets asked on every platform. I've been asked it on Tumblr. I've seen asked on Discord countless times. And it always leads to an interesting conversation, because the truth of the matter is it should be as long as you want it to be.
Yeah.
And there is no actual solid answer to that question. Particularly with fanfic, there are some guidelines and structures that if you're writing for certain publishable markets, you might need to follow. But for fanfic, the answer is generally that it matters more that your chapter has a beginning, a middle, and an end than that it's a certain length. But there are lots of people who have opinions about lengths. They have a favorite length they like to read. They have a favorite length they like to write. Though I will say, the number of people who have a favorite length they like to write vastly outweighs the number of people who care how long a chapter is when they're reading. It's definitely something that writers kind of internalize for themselves, but very few people even think about when they're reading. Yeah, I think the whole question of how long something should be, and, you know, should it be a one shot or should it be multiple chapters, is something that we could even talk about more down the line.
Yeah, first of all, that topic, but I was also thinking, like, we should definitely do the FAQs of fandom and topic considerations. That would be fascinating, because you're right. I've only been around for a little, you know, under 2 years, and I've seen the same 15 questions a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
But on the issue of the internalizing the standards, it's all, the question though is always posed as, what do people want to read the most?
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of us who are writers turn it on like, well, we have really no idea, but this is how we write.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's possible that people have really strong opinions about what they read. It's possible, but the language I see across a lot of platforms in my experience is that we've decided as creators that people have these kind of standards. And we want to honor that and be kind of some of that. I then connects to this idea. Well, am I not getting kudos because my chapters are too long or too short? And it's kind of that whole circle jerk of I create because I want to create, but this is a comedian, therefore I like responses. How do I create for responses, but for myself? So this tips into the bigger conversation that we all constantly have about being a creator in a communal hobby.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it seems to be like a fairly spread out, like there was definitely a majority for people who track their writing, but I wouldn't say it was necessarily a majority of writers. You know, like we had about 100 results in the poll, but obviously that doesn't even touch how many writers there are even in Steve Tony, let alone in Marvel fandom. So, you know, perhaps there are people who, maybe the kind of person who listens to the pod is the kind of person who keeps track of stuff because they like engaging with fandom in that like analysis-y kind of way. Whereas people who don't track things might also be the kinds of people who are less interested in listening to a podcast.
Yeah, so, it's also possible that they're just not on Twitter because Twitter is a whole lot of very, Twitter's a cesspool, as we know. We just didn't have another way to ask this question.
So yeah, it's an interesting topic. I've been tracking my words for a long time. And for me, as I said already, the numbers are about a sense of accomplishment. It's about liking to be able to look back and add everything up and be like, wow, I've written, you know, like 2.5 million words or whatever. And feeling like beyond the positive feelings I've had being part of the community and comments and kudos and collabs and all that fun stuff, it's also nice to be able to set that aside. Again, this comes back to that idea of a goal that is attainable. Word count is something I have complete control over. So it's something where that accomplishment is mine alone. There was no luck involved. There was no hitting the right tropes or having the right moment or getting shared by the right person. When you look at your accomplishment in the sense of this is how many pieces I've finished or how many words I've written, then that is something that is yours alone. And there's a certain separate kind of personal sense of achievement that can attach to that.
Yeah, I really love doing it because it relates in my head to how many fanfics I've written that are longer than my PhD. So I know that sounds crazy, but like when I was first writing back, getting back into creative writing and writing fic, and I explained to my mom the stories that I was writing, and I told her, I was like, well, my PhD was total when I turned everything in with even like my bibliography and everything else was 93,000 words. And it was, well, 93,000, like 474 or something like that. And it turned out to be like around 280 pages with charts and graphs and some other stuff I did. So the first fic I wrote being 135,000 words, I like looked at my mother. I said, I now have written a story longer than my doctorate. And so now when she and I are talking about how things are going and soulmate and I have the same kind of words, it'll be like, well, how many PhDs did you write this month? And it's kind of fun to think like that works for me because that was to this date, the hardest thing I've ever done, in a whole host of reasons. That book was the hardest book I've ever written, the thing I fought the hardest for in my life. And it took me 4.5 years to write it. And I am not always proud of it. I don't think my writing was particularly strong in it. I'm proud of the accomplishment, but I'm not, it didn't bring me joy to write it, as it were. And then I look at this thing and I'm like, okay, so I've written 9 PhDs over the last year and almost all of that brought me joy.
There you go.
And that's fantastic. And it feels this very kind of cathartic and emotional fuck you to everybody who was terrible to me about my PhD. but yeah, it's very similar to what you're saying, but for me, it's like a little bit even more personal about reclaiming that thing I thought I was bad at one point.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm so glad that I found that I was on Discord on the same day at the beginning of this year when you shared that tracking sheet. and I was able to, now I've learned that I am not using it correctly. So I will bug you to help me learn to use it correctly once we get the new one. But even the you know, Diet Coke version of the one I've been using has been really helpful for my mental health this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as always, you can still keep sending us your responses, your notes, your thoughts, your fandom feelings, and we'll talk about them in our next episode. But big thanks to everybody who voted in the poll and who had conversations with us on our social media this time around. And next up, we are going to hear from the Grammar Mustelid. All right. It's time for one of my most requested grammar corners ever. This is apostrophes. First off, don't panic. If apostrophes confuse you, you are really not alone. Think of them as grammatical homophones. There are some structures that may look or sound the same, but for different reasons, which makes it hard to learn the rules of apostrophes just from reading or just from hearing the language out loud. So you can forgive yourself for being confused, but it's actually not that complicated. The most common problem is actually using apostrophes too much. So hopefully I can give you the cases where you use them, and then we can start leaving them off when they're not needed. There are only two cases where you use an apostrophe. And I will also make a quick note here that the single quote looks like an apostrophe, but it's an entirely different diacritic. So today we're just talking about the apostrophe, which is part of a word, it's embedded in the word. And on another day, perhaps we'll talk about quotes and single quotes. So there are only two cases where you use an apostrophe. That's contractions and omissions and possessives. Then there are a lot of cases where you might feel the urge to use an apostrophe, but you don't need to. So first up, we have contractions and omissions. You use an apostrophe to indicate letters or sounds that are missing or have been removed. Contractions are two words that have had letters or sounds removed and then were smushed together. Words like don't, can't, won't, shouldn't, would've, and let's. All of these can be split back into the separate words. Do not, cannot, will not, should not, would have, and let us. Some of them we're used to seeing either way, like I am or I'm, but some are pretty much only ever used as contractions these days, so you might not even think of them as contractions, like o'clock, which is short for of the clock, or let's, which is short for let us. We also sometimes use apostrophes to indicate sounds that are dropped in speech, like when we're writing an accent phonetically. We might write singing as S-I-N-G-I-N apostrophe, with the last G dropped and the apostrophe on the end to indicate someone who says singin' instead of singing. In both these cases, the apostrophe tells us that something has been removed, whether it's to describe how something sounds or to form a contraction. Most of the time with contractions, it only affects the way that the word is written down. So if you're used to hearing English out loud, you might not be aware that some of these words like don't, can't, and won't have an apostrophe in them. So reading a lot will help you figure out when a word is a contraction. The second use is possessives. Possessives are constructions that indicate that something belongs to something else. The morpheme, or the little piece of language that we use in English that indicates possessiveness, is apostrophe S. So we take a noun and we add apostrophe S onto the end to form a possessive. Ferrets fix, the front doors lock, that book's cover. The cover belongs to the book. So we take book, we add apostrophe S, and that makes it possessive. It gives it claim over the thing that comes after. And if you remember our lesson earlier, that book's cover is a singular noun phrase. So you can use that as a subject in a sentence or an object. The morpheme that indicates plurals is just S. Out loud, many possessives and plurals are homophones. This can cause a lot of confusion. Ferrets fix, three ferrets. The word ferrets sounds the same in both of these cases, but the first one is written with an apostrophe and the second isn't. A common grammatical mistake is called the grocer's apostrophe because it's so common for greengrocer signs to have plurals with unnecessary apostrophes in them, like apples on sale with an apostrophe in apples. The only time when you might use an apostrophe to form a plural is the very rare case of pluralizing an initialization or acronym or the plural of a single letter. So something like, that word has two U's in it. We put U apostrophe S. This was born out of a need to prevent confusion. Without the apostrophe, we'd think it was the word us. So it doesn't actually fully make sense grammatically, but we've adopted that as a way to distinguish between the two things. So if you don't really need an apostrophe, don't use it. There are more cases where you do not use apostrophes than use them. You might have the inclination to pluralize names, especially ones that end in S like James, by adding apostrophe S, but this is not correct. You're not forming a plural there, you're forming a possessive. So if you want to talk about the two James in the room, for example, if Rhody and Bucky are both in the same place, you would say two James or two Jameses, T-W-O-J-A-M-E-S or two J-A-M-E-S-E-S. So just ask yourself, does my noun that I have the apostrophe S on, does it own something else? Is this a relationship of belonging? Or is there simply more than one of them? Because we are so used to writing names, especially with an apostrophe S on the end, since it's very rare to talk about having more than one of a person, our instinct is to hit that apostrophe. But if you're going back and you're editing a work, maybe you're writing some amazing multiverse romp with two Tonys and two Steves, make sure that you keep in mind which ones are possessives and which ones are plurals. Yet another common point of confusion is possessive pronouns. In English, we have a group of pronouns that are used to indicate possession. Hers, his, mine, ours, theirs, its, and yours. There are no apostrophes in possessive pronouns, even though they indicate possession. These words come wholesale with their possessiveness already attached, much like Steve and Tony to each other. So you don't need to add the apostrophe S morpheme to create possessiveness. We do not write H-E-R apostrophe S, we simply write H-E-R-S. This can cause problems because sometimes we end up with homophones that crisscross over these boundaries of apostrophe usage. For example, the word its, one of the most commonly misspelled words. There are two words that sound like its. One is the possessive pronoun that indicates something belongs to it, so the fridge's handle, its handle. Since this is a possessive pronoun, it does not have an apostrophe. But the other word, its, is a contraction. It's a squishing up of the words it and is. So we wouldn't say it is handle, but we would say it is cold outside or it's cold outside. In that case, you do have an apostrophe. Similarly, with your and your, another very common mistake, we have your, Y-O-U-R, the possessive pronoun, used in cases like your car, your fic, your favorite child, and your, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, which is a contraction that is short for you are. Luckily, there is a really, really easy way to test for whether you have a possessive pronoun or a contraction. Simply say the expanded version of the contraction out loud and see if it works. If it doesn't, you should use the form without the apostrophe. If it does, use the apostrophe. So if we have your dinner and we don't know which one to use, just say you are dinner. Does that sound right? Probably not, unless cannibalism is going on or someone's talking to their sandwich. So in that case, we would use the possessive pronoun, which does not have an apostrophe. What about you're pretty? If we expand that out, we get you are pretty, and that definitely sounds right. So we are going to use the contraction for you're pretty, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. It's nice out is short for it is nice out. It's too late for loud music. It is too late for loud music. Don't pull its tail. We wouldn't say don't pull it is tail. That clearly doesn't work. So that's the possessive pronoun, its. And I could do lots more examples. And if anyone wants me to run examples in type in the server, just hit me up anytime. And I'm happy to go over the difference between these two constructions. So what about combining plurals and possessives? And what about possessives for words ending in S? If you have a singular word or name ending in S, like James, you have the choice of either adding just an apostrophe or an apostrophe S. if you're working under a certain style guide, you'll want to check what it says. This is important if you're writing for work or school. You also want to make vitally sure that whatever you're doing, you're being consistent. So if this is creative writing for you or for your fanfic, pick one, but stick with it. There are also two ways to pronounce this construction, James or James's. Yes, it's the same as the plurals. And most people who pronounce the first way would choose just the apostrophe, J-A-M-E-S apostrophe, pronounced James, James metal arm. Or if they pronounce it the second way, James's, they would write the apostrophe S, J-A-M-E-S apostrophe S, James's metal arm. How do we form possessives from plurals? Just the apostrophe. The cat's milk, C-A-T apostrophe S, is a singular possessive. One cat owns the milk. The cat's milk, C-A-T-S apostrophe, is a plural possessive. There is more than one cat and they all own the milk. Think of it as dropping the last S, not as putting the apostrophe in a different place. Things get more complicated and harder to follow when we talk about compound or joint possessives, things that are owned by more than one entity that are different. So instead of multiple cats, we have two different things that own the same thing. Flame and Ferret's podcast means the single podcast of both Ferret and Flame. Flame's and Ferret's podcasts means there are two podcasts, at least, one for each of Flame and Ferret. A confusion I see a lot is how to share ownership between you, the speaker, and someone else. Flame and Ferret's podcast is easy enough, but when I'm talking in first person, I should say Flame's and my podcast, with Flame having its own possessive construction, Flame's with the apostrophe S, and my is the possessive personal pronoun, which is in adjectival form here. Please note that I's, I apostrophe S, is not a possessive construction in English, ever. It is never Flame and I's podcast, or Ashy and I's fic, or I's and Ashy's fic. No. I is a pronoun. It has its own possessive forms. So please don't use I's. The only case ever that you would write I apostrophe S is if you were pluralizing the letter I, which is fairly rare. But if you wanted to write something like we were talking about earlier, there are four I's in this word, then you might use I apostrophe S. But a capital I as a pronoun should never be possessivized by adding apostrophe S. It is common grammatical courtesy that in subject position, the other person or people come first and you last. So it's Flames and my podcast, not my and Flames podcast or me and Flames podcast. This is hard. It's okay if it's confusing. And in colloquial spoken English, often these rules are thrown out. If you get stuck with these constructions, you can Google joint possession grammar or compound possession grammar to find help and more examples. So to sum everything up, there are two cases when we use an apostrophe, contractions and omissions and possessive nouns. There are two cases where we might feel the urge to use an apostrophe, but we shouldn't, plurals and possessive pronouns, especially the homophonic ones. As always, the script from this segment will be in the show notes so you can see the examples live. If there's anything else you want to hear on Grammar Musta Lid, let me know and I'll add it to the list. Thanks for listening and happy apostrophe-ing.
Hello again, fandom. This is Only More Love, back with your events forecast. Today, I'll be sharing some information about what's going on, challenge-wise, in a Marvel fandom near you. Here's the usual note before I start with the current events. You'll be able to find everything I mention in this forecast, linked and explained, in the show notes for each episode over on podonthesuit.com. Now, on to the fun stuff. Round 4 of the Marvel Fluff Bingo is open for signups until March 16th. Go grab a card to write all the fluffy themes. And here's a reminder that the Marvel Holiday Fest, a prompt fest based on holiday movie plots that's open to all ships and is without minimum requirements, is still open for fills until January 31st. The signups for Go Bang Yourself Bang also remain open until December 31st. So if you're feeling brave, Go for it and create art or fic for an existing fic or art piece of yours. The Marvelous Aces Holiday Bingo Card is open for fills of any kind, featuring A-spec characters as well. Time to play around with all the classic tropes. It's the last stretch of time in which to fill some CAPIM holiday community prompts. Fills are accepted until December 27th. 500 plus prompts in a variety of universes, so go, have fun! The Calm also announced its annual set of Remix events. You can still sign up for the Remix Exchange and the Remix Relay until tomorrow, December 21st. Works will be due by February 7th for the Exchange, which is a nice amount of time. Remix Madness, a remix fest, will also go on between January 10th and February 20th. Madness has no minimum requirements and is open to all types of fan works. If you have questions on how remixing works, have a look at the detailed post on the CAP Iron Man community. Another reminder that you can get a customized STB, Steve, Tony, Bucky, bingo card until January 31st. After that date, you'll still be able to request a generic card from February 1st to May 31st. All combinations of Steve, Bucky, and Tony are allowed, so you get to play with no less than 4 ships in any medium you want and without any requirements whatsoever, other than responsible tagging. Have fun, and please join the server if you feel like chatting. There's another week to create some fills for a Very Darcy Advent Bingo, if you ship Steve Darcy or Tony Darcy, or a poly variation of these 3. Don't miss out. This has been your events forecast, friends. We hope to see you again next time. Until then, please be safe, and as always, happy shipping.
Episode 20. Next time we talk, it'll be 2021, and I'm sure we're all hoping for a better year, whether you're making specific goals or just have your fingers crossed in general.
Everyone light all the positivity candles, do all of your ritual dances that you need to do, do everything you need. We need as much positive energy in the universe that I think we can all take right now. Massive thanks to Nana for our gorgeous cover art, to Holly for chatting with me on writing groups, and to the podcast staff, as always, for everything they do. We got that incredible art from Nana, by the way, because they sent it to us through the cover artist application. If you have or you want to create art to be featured, please, please, please do the same.
And finally, thank you for listening. Don't forget to review us on your favorite pod platform so more fandom friends can find us. Thanks for a great 2020 and all the ways that we could make it that. And we'll see you next year for episode 21.
Happy New Year!
You've been listening to Pod on the Suit. Thanks for joining us.